It's interesting, we'll look in a moment. Jonah's one of the prophets that are sometimes called the minor prophets. Doesn't mean their message wasn't important, it just means that the books that their messages are written down in are a bit smaller than the other books, which there are some prophets that have got bigger books in the Bible. So Jonah's one of the messengers of God, and it's interesting, as opposed to lots of the other books in the Bible that contain messages from God's prophet, this book is mainly taken up with God's dealings with his prophet. And there's really only one sentence of message from the prophet, but we're going to look at that tonight. But nonetheless, it teaches us lots and lots about who God is and what he would have us as human creatures do. Tonight we're looking at that theme, a wicked city turns and sets an example. So thanks, Michael. I could just like, for any who maybe haven't been here for the first two talks, can we just reorient ourselves? Let's just remember where the book of Jonah is in the Bible. I think you've looked at this illustration before. The Bible is a library of books. It's not just one, and it's bound as one book, but it's actually a compact library of 66 books. So thanks, Michael. It's divided up into two parts. In the Old Testament, 39 books which lead up to Jesus, and then in the New Testament, 27 books which tell of Jesus' time on from that. Thanks, Michael. And then in the Old Testament, there are 17 books, as I said, of prophets, four big books, and 13 small ones. And Jonah is right there in the library as one of those 17 books of prophecy. So that's where the book that we're doing the Bible talks is in the Bible. And we know that the city of Nineveh is the city that Jonah was sent to speak to and bring God's message to. So where else is Nineveh talked about in the Bible? Well, in the first five books of the law, we read about how the city of Nineveh was first settled, and then in the one of the history books, we hear about how the people in that city came and attacked God's people, and that's repeated in one of the larger books of prophecy, in Isaiah. And then two of the other smaller prophets, Zephaniah mentions the city of Nineveh, but Nahum the prophet is particularly concerned to speak about God's ultimate judgment. But most importantly for us tonight, in the New Testament, four of the accounts we have of the teaching of Jesus, the life of Jesus, there's the Gospels, mention what Jesus had to say about the city of Nineveh and Jonah the prophet that God sent to Nineveh. And both Matthew and Luke give us an account, sort of parallel accounts of what Jesus had to say. So we've seen where Jonah is in the Bible, where Nineveh is in the Bible. Thanks, Michael. Let's think about where Jonah was in time. Here we are right now in this timeline, and right at the beginning of time, Jesus created the whole universe. And of course, the whole turning point of history was when Jesus came to earth and was born as a human. He lived and taught, he died, he rose from death, and he ascended back into heaven. Thanks, Michael. And sometime between now, sometime from now into the future, there's a day coming when Jesus will return and he will judge the world and he will take his people to be with him. Jesus said no man knows the hour or the day when that's going to happen, but there's a definite day fixed. So that's kind of the timeline that we're living on. Where was Jonah? Well, you remember that God called Abraham to be the founder of a nation of people, and his son Isaac and his son Jacob followed him. And then he sent a king, a great King David, who was an ancestor of Jesus. And Jonah sits in that timeline. So Jonah was about somewhere around between 750 and 800 years before Jesus was born. So that kind of, if that helps you to sort of work out when in time this is all happening. Go backwards from now, back to Jesus' time, and back another about 760 or so years, and that's the time that Jonah is speaking. And then finally, in our recap, Where in the world was Jonah? His hometown was this place called Gathhepa, which is near Nazareth, where Jesus was grew up. And we remember that in chapter 1, Jonah was in a boat and he was running away from God. And then he was thrown overboard to escape from the storm that God had sent. In chapter 2, we saw that Jonah was in a fish, where he found a renewed faith in God. And the end of that chapter, God so organized the fish that it vomited him out on dry land. And that city, Nineveh, over here, is the city that God had told him to take God's message to. He tried to run away. God intervened. And as this third chapter begins, we see Jonah with a renewed sense of purpose going to the city of Nineveh. Now you can see this blue line, River Tigris, and the city was built on this river. So thanks. And just to help us get some sort of a sense of Nineveh, the painting up in the top left-hand corner is a very, you know, it's just someone's imagination. There was a man called Layard, who was an archaeologist, and I think this is sort of drawn from some sketches he had. To the right, we've got an aerial view of the city, and so we can see the Tigris River there, and then a tributary, the Kosa River, which went through the city, and a big moat all around. So it was surrounded by water. It was an exceedingly great city. So that sort of gives us the background of what this place was. If we could jump, leave that there and jump to Jonah 3, that would be great. Thanks, Michael. So let's consider the portion of the Bible that we're particularly considering tonight. Jonah chapter 3, it's a very short chapter, 10 verses, and we can look at it. The word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach to it the message that I tell you." So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh, according to the word of the Lord. Now, Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, a three-day journey in extent. And Jonah began to enter the city on the first day's walk. Then he cried out and said, "Yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown." So the people of Nineveh believed God, proclaimed a fast, and put on sackcloth, from the greatest to the least of them. Then word came to the king of Nineveh, and he arose from his throne and laid aside his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. And he caused it to be proclaimed and published throughout Nineveh by the decree of the king and his nobles, saying, "Let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink water. Man and beast be covered with sackcloth and cry mightily to God. Let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who can tell if God will turn and relent and turn away from his fierce anger so that we may not perish?" Then God saw their works, that they turned from their evil way, and God relented from the disaster that he had said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. So that's the portion we have tonight. So, as I said, I think you can see already that that's a wicked city that turned, and we'll see how that wicked city in turning sets an example. So I'd like us to consider four things tonight. Thanks, Michael. Let's consider the prophet's message, then the city's response, and then Jesus' message regarding Jonah and the people of Nineveh, And it's important for us to think, well, what's my response if the city responded to the preaching of the prophet Jonah? What's my response to that preaching and to Jesus' message about these things? Thanks, Michael. Well, as I said, Jonah's a really remarkable book because a book of prophecy, because there's the prophecy. Yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Now, that's probably a summary of what Jonah led off with, because we know, we'll see shortly, that Jesus said that the people of Nineveh responded to the preaching, to the message, the proclamation of Jonah. He said that Jonah became a sign to these people. So, somehow or other, and there's some level of speculation, we have to try to put all these things together. Some people have speculated that maybe the period of time in the belly of the great fish had brought physical changes in Jonah's appearance. Maybe the digestive juices had changed the colour of his hair or the colour of his skin or something, so that when he came into the city, he looked different and people took notice. Maybe. Maybe he actually told them that he'd been 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish. But certainly we know that Jesus told the people of his day that Jonah became a sign to the people of Nineveh by being 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish. So presumably somehow or other the people got to know about what God had, how God had dealt with his prophet Jonah. But the Holy Spirit has seen fit to record this as the core of the proclamation that Jonah gave to the people. 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Now, if someone turned up on the TV and said, 40 days and Brisbane's going to be destroyed, how would we respond? Any thoughts? Initial response, don't believe it. You'd probably say, okay, well, that's a pretty bold claim to make. Why should I believe you? And possibly the people of Nineveh had a similar sort of a response, but the prophet's message no doubt came with the authority of one who had spent 3 days and three nights in the belly of a great fish. Whether that was physically evident from a changed appearance, whether that was evident from his own words about himself, when people said, who are you, where have you come from, what's been going on? Whether some people have speculated that maybe there were eyewitnesses that saw the fish vomit up Jonah on the shore, and maybe they accompanied him and told people about them. We just don't know. But somehow or other, the people saw the authority of the living God behind the bold proclamation of this man. Could we just maybe back up to the map, the picture of the city? Thanks, Michael. The Bible records for us that Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, 3 days' journey in extent. Now, that's all the Bible tells us, and we're not absolutely sure exactly what that means. Clearly, it's trying to convey to us that Nineveh wasn't just a collection of mud huts on the side of a river. Nineveh was the capital city of a world superpower. It was like saying, you know, London is an exceedingly great city. Washington, D.C. was an exceedingly great city. It's a significant set of buildings, a significant collection of culture, a significant array of temples and buildings of public administration. Whether it means it would take you 3 days to walk right around the circumference, or whether it means it would take you 3 days to sort of traverse the whole city and cover it, it was a big city. And Jonah had just started on his first day of covering the city and started to proclaim that message. 40 days and Nineveh will be overthrown. Now, it's like rocking up in London or Washington DC and saying, 40 days and the whole place is going to be destroyed. It's a bold move because this is the centre, the capital city of a world superpower. And you just, here you are, this fellow from rural Israel who's just turning up and proclaiming this message. Perhaps this was some of the reluctance that was behind Jonah's desire to go to Tarshish and not go to Nineveh. But we find out more about that in the next chapter. Certainly, it was a great city. It was a city of great power and great wickedness, but it needed the conviction that a great God had an even greater authority and greater power over it. And so the prophet's message essentially was, there is a living and true God who has the power to destroy your city. Even though you're a superpower, there is a true and living God in heaven who has the power to utterly destroy you. And he has the power to even name a day when he will do it. Now, clearly, that, maybe with some added information about himself and being in the fish, was the core of the message of Jonah. So thanks, Michael, we just press forward. So the prophet's message was pretty basic. How do the people respond? Initially, this is what we're told. The people of Nineveh believed God. Proclaimed a fast, put on sackcloth from the greatest to the least of them. Here we see described the two absolutely core basic responses that are vital to come into a right relationship with the living God. First of all, is to be on the basis of being convinced that the message that he has sent us is true, the message that his prophets, that his son, that his apostles have spoken to us, that are written down in the Bible, that message is true. If we're convinced of that, we respond by believing it and acting upon it. The way these people acted was to say, we've been going the wrong way. There is a true God who is powerful enough to absolutely destroy us. When we look at ourselves through his eyes, what are we like? Our ways, in a sense, the roads we're going down, the highways we're travelling, the pathways of our lives are evil. And what we use our hands to do is violent. We've been reminded of the way that the Assyrians boasted in their public, in the inscriptions they had on walls, the pictures that they had carved into their buildings. They boasted in the violence with which they vanquished their enemies. In a sense, they were proud of their capacity for violence. They were proud of their capacity for evil. And in fact, that's what the Lord had said to Jonah right at the very beginning of this book. Go to Nineveh and preach that great city and preach against it, for their wickedness has come up before me. Suddenly, the people of Nineveh saw themselves through God's eyes. They believed God. They believed that when the prophet said, You are people who deserve destruction from the holy, the perfect, the perfectly good God. The evil paths that you are travelling down, the evil way of life you're conducting, the violence that your hands are so ready to deal out to people offends the true and living God, and he is determined to destroy you. They believe that message. And they, having seen themselves as God saw them, they determined to turn away from the things that offended God. They were determined to put those things away from them. And the visible way that they put this into action was to say, we're not going to eat, we're not even going to drink. We're going to take off all of our fine, gorgeous clothes, and we're just going to put sackcloth, just that, the hessian material that we'd normally store the grain in. And as we'll see in a moment, and maybe if we could go back to the Bible passage, thanks Michael, and just back up a bit, thanks. The people believing God showed in their behaviour that they believed God and that they were determined to put away this evil from them. Now, Nineveh was a really big city. As we said, Jonah had just got one day into a city that took 3 days to sort of get around. And his preaching, and presumably it had such an immediate impact, that the people he was preaching to had just said, oh, this is true. There is a true and living God. He is going to destroy us. We have to do something. We have to respond. I couldn't even face eating food or even drinking water at the knowledge that my behaviour, the behaviour of my people, has so offended God. Let's just declare a fast. Let's put on this sackcloth. And that was in the first bit of the city that Jonah had got to. And news of this spread to the king, to the royal palace, one of those great big impressive buildings that we saw in that picture before. And presumably the messengers who brought that news to the king had been so convinced of the authority behind Jonah's message that the king was convinced. Can you imagine King George III in London, or President Obama in Washington or whatever, and somebody comes in and with presumably sufficient conviction tells you, you know, all those false gods we've been worshipping in all those temples around the city, they're not true. There's only one true living God, and he sent his messenger to say he's going to destroy us. Imagine being so convinced, you thought, right, we just can't do anything else. The whole business of the empire is suspended. In fact, I couldn't even think about eating right now. I don't want this fancy robe that sets me apart as king on anymore. I don't want to sit on a throne. I'm just so overwhelmed by this news. I'm going to throw my robe away. I'm just going to put a sack on. I'm just going to go and find where there's a fire and there's just some dirty ash, and I'm just going to sit in the ash and presumably throw it on my head and just demonstrate how sorry I am for being the leader of such a people who've just been so proud of being evil and who've just been so proud of being violent. And of course, this chapter is full of messages. God gives Jonah a message. He gives the people a message. The people take the message to the king. And then the king sends the message out. So God's words sort of bouncing, reverberating all around the city. And so the king says, by the decree of the king and his nobles, from great and small, and we saw in the previous verse, everyone, it wasn't just the big wigs or the little people, it was everyone who proclaimed the fast. And so the king and his great ones have said, right, this extends to the whole city, humans and animals, whether it's cattle, whether it's sheep, whether it's goats, whatever. No food. not even water to drink. Cover yourself with sackcloth and cry out mightily to God. Because this must have been evident from the preaching of Jonah. Maybe the fact that he had become a sign to them, the fact that he'd been 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish and then brought back into the land of the living again, maybe this sign gave them hope. Maybe as well as a message of judgment, there's a possibility of mercy with this God. And that was something they believed as well. And the king saw this so clearly, didn't he? He said, let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who can tell if God will turn and relent, turn away from his fierce anger so that we may not perish? So that was the people's response, was a general from greatest to the least, from the king down to the beggar in the street. It even extended to the animals. They believed God. They said, when God sends a messenger, when he tells us something about himself, it's true, and we have to act on it. We have to turn away from our wickedness and trust that there's a possibility of mercy from this God. So that was the city's response. Now, Jesus had something really important to say about this. So in Matthew 12, 38 to 41, we see how Jesus interpreted this. There was a time when some of the scribes and Pharisees spoke to Jesus and said, Teacher, we want to see a sign from you. They meant a miracle, some really spectacular thing that would show that they should believe Jesus. But he answered and said to them, an evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. Really pay attention to this next sentence. Jesus says, the men of Nineveh will rise up in the judgment with this generation and condemn it because they repented at the preaching of Jonah. And indeed, a greater than Jonah is here. The parallel passage in Luke just gives us another little bit of information from the same time. Jesus presumably mentioned that he uses the phrase, for as Jonah became a sign to the people of Nineveh. And presumably that's how he became a sign, by being 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish. This is a really important message from Jesus. It's a message we need to take notice of, just like we should take notice of the message of Jonah. How did the people of Nineveh respond? They were exceedingly wicked. They deserved God's judgment. They saw themselves, they believed that God's message was true, and they saw themselves as God saw them. And they responded. They turned away. And Jesus uses the word repent. Repent really is to have a change of mind. And on the basis of that change of mind, to proceed in a different direction, to desire a different direction of life. And Jesus is saying to these scribes and Pharisees, you want to see something amazing happen that'll tell you that I really need to be listened to and you can trust me? Well, you don't need any other sign than the sign that you're going to see. I'm going to die, and 3 days later I'm going to come back to life again. Now, if you need something more amazing than that, you're never going to believe. And just think about it. When the people of Nineveh heard Jonah's preaching, they responded, they were just struck with awe. There was just this massive city-wide turning from evil and abhorrence of violence and a searching after God's mercy, a yearning after the mercy that God might show to them. Look at their example, says Jesus. They responded at the preaching of Jonah. And when you look at the record of Jonah, Jonah was a really frail man as a prophet, but they responded to him. And Jesus says, I'm much, much greater than Jonah. I'm a perfect prophet. If the men of Nineveh repented when they heard Jonah's message and saw the sign that he demonstrated before them, how culpable are you? How much to blame are you if you refuse to repent at my preaching? Remember that timeline we looked at? Jesus is there at the turning point of history where history flexes on itself. He is at that joint between the Old Testament and the New Testament. God's way of dealing with his people came to fulfillment in Jesus and then proceeded from there. And Jesus is looking back to Jonah and he's looking forward to the judgment. And he's saying it's really important how you respond to my teaching, says Jesus, because I'm much greater than Jonah. Thanks, Michael. So, how should we respond? To the preaching of Jonah? Believe God. That's right, they believe him, and the way we believe, we don't just believe that he is there, that he is the one true God. We trust that the word that he has spoken through his messengers is true. We trust it. We also need to respond to that and turn away from evil, to seek and desire his holiness, and at the same time, we're not depending on our own ability to do good works. We're recognising that when God speaks of judgment, we need to believe that that's true. But we also need to believe that when God speaks of mercy, he can be trusted as well. No doubt the people had heard Jonah speak of God's mercy to him in bringing him back to life, as it were, after being virtually dead in the fish. And they were emboldened to seek mercy from God as well. Now, as I said, the city of Nineveh was a greatly wicked city. And the city turned and set an example. Sadly, they set another example, and it's an example for us not to follow. Their best example was repenting at the message of Jonah. Their worst example was that they later turned back to their evil ways. And 150 years after Jonah preached, the city of Nineveh was destroyed. And God sent his prophet Nahum to foretell this judgment. And there's a whole book in the Old Testament which speaks of this. So, it's really important that we respond by following the best example of the Ninevites. Now, if you're someone who's been maybe grappling with that question, is there just one true living God?
Yes.
If so, what does he say about me? How does he view me? Can I see myself through his eyes? Can I see the wickedness that's in my heart, the wrong things that my hands find to do? When I see myself through his eyes, do I really hate that and really desire to put it away and to seek after the way of life that he would have me live, a holy life? And do I trust in the mercy that he offers? That's right, he does. He wants us to live a holy life, trusting in the way of rescue that he's given through his son Jesus. Jonah was an amazing prophet. He had amazing experiences of God's preserving mercy and forgiving mercy. But Jesus is a much greater prophet than Jonah. So ultimately, we need to heed the message of Jesus.